You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. You can also check out the written form of that content on Locked On Wolves FanRag, the FanRag website. Almost messed that up there, my own site. How embarrassing, jeez. Almost as embarrassing as a loss to Memphis, but not quite as bad. Today we have on a special guest from SB Nation's Peachtree Hoops. He covers the Atlanta Hawks. He's going to be helping me break down tonight's game where the Hawks come to Minnesota and play the Minnesota Timberwolves. Graham Chappell, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me. Nice Grizzlies joke, by the way.
You know what? The only way to deal with true pain like that is to try and make humor out of it, I think. So I'm going to try and make it as humorous as possible to try and hide my tears.
Of which I'm sure there are many.
Oh, my goodness gracious. We talked about this at length yesterday, but it bears repeating that all of these games for the Timberwolves are very important. They are there right now in the eighth spot. And dropping an easy game to the Grizzlies is definitely no help to the organization, no help to their playoff run. And frankly, to enter the playoffs in the eighth seed isn't great either, even though I know this team hasn't been to the playoffs in quite some time, because you're going to get bounced in four games by the Rockets. So a grim situation here for the Timberwolves.
It's bad because you actually want to win games. That's what makes it 10 times worse.
Yeah, of course, I guess I can't be complaining too much. The was a 21-win Atlanta Hawks roll into town. First of all, what kind of mental strain is it covering this team day in and day out as they are trying to tank their season?
Oof. It's been a long season, I'm not going to lie. It has taken its toll, and I'm glad it's coming to an end soon. But yeah, just the fan base, some people get it. And some people roll with it, and others just don't, and that this is the absolute worst thing they could ever be doing. Some people would rather just stay gun for the 8th seed or 6th seed as their ceiling, and they just want to remind people every single time that this is wrong, everything, this all sucks, you should try to win games, and a season of that kind of thing does drain on you, I have to be honest.
You know what the worst thing for that... because I write for SB Nation as well. One of the worst things is that there's a comment section at the bottom of every article that you write, and there's always those guys who just read the headline, and then they go and comment right away, and they don't really read the content of the article, and so they don't know what's going on.
There'll be some times where I go away for a bit, and they come back, and like there's like 30-something comments, and I was like, oh no, what has broken out here? It's just literally the tanking versus not tanking debate. I was like, oh come on, this is like, no, this is too much, too often. But it's hopefully that will be, it's coming to an end soon this season. This is the last game against the Western Conference for the Hawks. They go back, and we can be done with this season soon, because it's just one of those seasons.
Exactly. Hey, but the best part of your season is coming up here, the NBA draft. So you've got all kinds of draft content that you can write up, and that should be a lot more lighthearted for a team like the Atlanta Hawks.
Hopefully. I mean, we've spent all season arguing about the draft pick that might come in and what position it'll be once we know it. And it'll be a nice change of pace, I think. Although I will miss, it'll be weird not. This is my first season not where I won't be covering the Hawks in the playoffs. So it's going to be weird, that little stretch in April near the end of it. But there's a lot of because the Hawks have so many picks as such, they have their own. I'm sure we'll talk about it. The T-Wolves, there's a vested interest there. They own the Rockets pick, and I think maybe some other things in the second. But they can pick. There's so many areas they can pick, so there's a lot of prospects to have to cover. So I'm sure everyone at Peachtree Hoops will be extremely busy between the end of the season and up to the draft.
Oh, absolutely. There's plenty of different guys to look at, especially when there's so many openings on this team and so many places that you can put guys. There's not really a set position or a set mold of kind of player that you're specifically looking for. It seems like there's maybe like 20 guys on the table rather than for most teams it's probably like 10 or 15. So definitely a wide berth of players they're looking at. We're going to get to a bunch of stuff. We're going to talk about the personnel on this team, what the Hawks are looking to do here as they close out the season, learn a little bit about the opponent, learn a little bit about the Atlanta Hawks. Then we're going to get to matchups, to predicting how tonight goes, who's going to go off, maybe a final score as well. But we're going to get to all that later on the episode. First of all, you talked about this is the first time covering the Hawks for you that they're going to miss the playoffs, and really a rapid turnaround from the 60-win team. I talked about this a lot in the preseason because obviously Jeff Teague, one of those former Atlanta Hawks who was on the 60-win Atlanta team, now on the Timberwolves, talked about that team a lot going into the season and kind of comparing that team to how Teague would fit into the Timberwolves now. What has it been like for you watching this turnover and watching kind of the great escape of talent leaving Atlanta over the last couple of seasons and now what you're left with? What has that been kind of like watching that exodus?
It's been tough. I think the big one, like, going last summer, like, I knew there was a good chance that Paul Millsap wasn't coming back, but, you know, you had to look at this team's ceiling as what was possible, what they had, and to re-sign Millsap possibly long-term and no way they're going to match the stupid offer sheet that the Knicks offered to Tim Hardaway Jr. It just makes sense that some of those guys go. But the big one that got away, and this is one I particularly get hung up on because there is a whole big what-if scenario. It is the Al Horford scenario where they prioritize getting Dwight in. I think they re-upped Bazemore before they turned their attentions to Horford. I mean, obviously the good thing is that Dwight Howard's not. I was of the opinion that Dwight Howard is not good for the Hawks, and thankfully a season later he was gone. But to let Horford go, that's where it really began to. Like, Teague, you know, he seems like he wanted something different. I think, and that's why, he requested the trade that he did. And he got sent home to Indy for a season before heading off to your Wolves. But yeah, the Horford one's the big one because I think if the Hawks had just, and you read the different reports at the time and Woj and the such reporting that there's a $5 million difference between the two sets of valuations met by, I don't know, Horford's side and the Hawks, and it's just a situation that, you know, and he talked about it like he would have stayed if the Hawks had just given him what he wanted. And these type of players don't come around often, and they want, especially in Atlanta, where you're kind of had to, you know, free agents aren't always going to be huge coming over there compared to say other markets, but
like a Miami,
and like the Rockets and the such, and Boston, and heck, it'll be interesting to see what the Lakers can do this season. So finally, to reverse their free agent fortunes. But yeah, the big one was letting Horford go, and that kind of set the tone for the entire next season with Dwight and this team that didn't really mesh, and it just went from there.
Well, hindsight is 2020 as well, but bummer is that I feel like he would have played really well with the guys around him, now the young guys that they would have had around him. Like, if that happens, maybe some things break differently, but if you have John Collins and Prince around him, these kind of guys who play that power forward position, but they don't have to play down low, they can play all over the place and rim run and are really good in transition and long and fast, and you have Al Horford, who can kind of play this weird position where he's a center technically or a power forward if you want to put him there as well, but he can also do a little bit of ball handling, can play a lot at the top of the key and play out on the perimeter. And then now you go into this draft and there's more long athletes. You look at guys like a Kevin Knox, maybe something like that, where you can add more of these long kind of two to four kind of guys that they can guard, and they're really long on the perimeter and they can play inside out on offense, and you have a veteran like Al Horford in that mix. I think that becomes a really fun scenario for the Hawks.
He's just a fun player to have on your team, as Boston fans I'm sure are rejoicing, and he's an all-star again this season. But you can just give him the ball atop the key and you just run guys around him, because he can make that extra pass, he can make that nice bounce pass for a cutter, you know. He's just really versatile as what he can do, and he's a great defender as well. I think that can that escapes, I think, people's notice as well, is that he's just, as a defender, I think he's right up there, I think, what he can do.
Absolutely. He's definitely quietly, I think not enough people pay attention to him, but he's quietly one of the better players in the NBA. And he's just a great guy. He's like the kind of that missing link that you didn't know almost all the time that you needed. But when you put him on the team, it's such a world of difference that once he's gone, you realize how big of an impact he was and how much the team kind of really needed him there, both I think in the locker room and on the court, because I think he's just as much of a locker room presence as anything else.
Absolutely. He's just a great guy, Al Horford. He really is.
We're going to get to a quick break for some sponsors, but we're going to also talk about predictions, about what to expect from tonight's game. But first, we're going to get a word from some sponsors. You know, I think I wanted to do this podcast because I saw on Twitter that you're a Tottenham fan. I am a huge Tottenham Hotspurs fan. Harry Kane forever. I got into soccer actually in high school. One of my really good buddies was into soccer, and I started watching it, and then the World Cup came around, and I became a huge soccer fan, and I follow the Premier League really closely, so I'm a huge Harry Kane fan, and I had to have you on the podcast once I saw that you were a Tottenham follower. And so basically that's why you're on the show today. I should let people know your voice sounds so much better than mine because you're calling in from Ireland.
Oh dear, people have been wanting to tell me. I don't know, it's one of those things.
Exactly. No, but I'm gonna get off. I just had to bring that up because I want to let you know,
awesome.
Huge Tottenham fan, and Harry Kane is one of the best soccer players in the world. I don't care what anybody else says. But moving on to basketball, which I'm sure is what people really want to hear about, and this kind of bleeds into what to expect from tonight, but this season has kind of been a massive talent evaluation for the Atlanta Hawks. And so as we come to the close here, what are some of the young guys on this team that really stick out to you that you would like to see on the roster next season?
Well, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of roster turnover, I think, especially since the trade deadline and buyouts with, you know, Bellinelli and Ilyasova heading on. The ones I'm really interested in, and he's injured at the moment, which is unfortunate, but Jalen Morris out of he's from a Division 2 Molloy, that's what it's called, from Molloy. Jalen Morris, I really like him. I like his defensive upside. He suffered an ankle injury just after he signed a second 10-day contract, but I believe they've been signed to a multi-year deal with obviously various non-guarantee for the next season as such, just to, mm-hmm. to shore him up. So I do like him a lot. Isaiah Taylor, who is a guy that's been around near the end of last year, around October or so, he's come in and he's kind of to and fro that second, third point guard. You're going to see him a lot tomorrow because he will be the starter with Dennis Schroeder out, and I think Malcolm Delaney still out with his ankle injury. So Isaiah Taylor will be the starting point guard for the Hawks, and I love his burst of speed. He's a very quick guard, and he's had two career highs on this current road trip. The Hawks have been on this 6-game road trip that ends in Minnesota tonight. He did it at Sacramento and just there at Houston, and in those two games, just no one could really keep up with him off the dribble. He just blitzes by, but he's got a little defensive upside to him as well, which is nice because Dennis Schroeder doesn't really give the Hawks that. So
you know what, that's a very nice way to put that.
Yeah, it is what it is. Look, and to be fair, I'm not a Dennis Schroeder fan, but his defense has been a bit better this year, but it's still not good.
Yeah, he's definitely a point guard who is very concerned with the offense. We'll put it that way.
Oh, well, there is no question.
What have you thought about John Collins? He was one of my kind of sneaky favorite guys coming into the draft last year, just because he's a really great athlete. He can do a lot of things in transition for a basketball team, and I really liked how aggressive he was on the boards. What have you thought of him over the course of basically now a season of watching Collins?
He's been really fun to watch, and watching just how he's grown from watching him at Summer League to what he is now. He just had a really good feel. I think his feel is getting better and better and better. Defensively, which is one of the big concerns for him coming out of Wake Forest, he's kind of definitely improved. 101, he could still do a bit of work, and he has been prone to foul trouble throughout the season, but his awareness in help defensive situations has been, his that improvement in that area has been really fun to watch. And just offensively, I mean, you, like you say, like he can jump out of the building. He is, when you can, it's you can throw terrible lobs and he can go up and grab them, because he's just that athletic, and he can just make the crowd go wow, because even offensively, like expanding his game. You know, he's been practicing the corner three a lot, and he's been hitting some of those recently. So he's expanding his game beyond the basket, and we haven't seen too much of him in the post, which I think some people would like to see, because I'm fairly sure he did that a lot in Wake Forest. But he's been fun to watch, and he's a very high character guy. I think that's what Hawks GM Travis Schlenk prioritized what he's looking for in his players when he drafts, is people with high character, and Collins definitely has abundance of that. He's a really, really good dude.
No, definitely. And it's one of those guys where even though the Hawks are having a down year, he can kind of still get the stadium behind the team with some of the plays that he's showing up with night to night. So I think it's definitely maybe one of the more underrated things that's important on a 21-win team, is that you have a guy who can still get the fans out of their seats from night to night and get them excited for something about the basketball team.
Yeah, and he just brings an energy as well. He just gives that extra effort, especially mm-hmm. on the boards as well. He just messes things up in there. Just gets himself stuck in. I think people really appreciate his the effort he gives on a night in, night out basis.
Definitely. Switching gears very specifically to tonight's matchup, the Hawks ranked 23rd in defensive rating in the NBA. But the Timberwolves are ranked 24th with a defensive rating. So I think that this one, if the Timberwolves aren't careful, and clearly they weren't careful against the Grizzlies, they could be in a kind of a tight game, because the offense of the Hawks is ranked 22nd in the NBA. But the Timberwolves defense is just so bad right now that I think there is a way where the Hawks can maybe scare them a little bit in like a second quarter if somebody gets hot from downtown and just knocks down a few shots. There's a way where this can be closer than it needs to be for the Timberwolves, and that's kind of scary for me.
It's definitely a trap game situation kind of feel to it, but I think now coming off of that Memphis loss, I think that will really have
brought things into focus for them, hopefully.
Yeah, those snap themselves out a bit, so they'll just be a bit more wary. But it should be, they should maybe have an easier time, because there's no Kent Bazemore, he's done for the season. No Dennis Schroeder tonight. The person you need to watch out for is Taurean Prince, who has on a couple of occasions really exploded into life, and he can be that guy that kicks off from downtown. You know, he's shot happy, like he is shot happy. He does like to jack them up. But he can make them. Like, he is shooting, I think, is it 38% from three this season on a number of attempts. Yes, 38.2%. He can, he'll get them up, and you know what, he can make them. He's a bit streaky, so he could go, conceivably, he could go 5 for 11 or so, or 5 for 8. Could easily go 1 for 7. Like, it is.
There's no in between.
To it. Yeah, it can be one extreme or the other, but. If the Hawks are to spearhead a challenge tonight, it will be behind Taurean Prince. Because again, unless Isaiah, it depends how, if Jeff T can slow down the penetration of Isaiah Taylor. Because if there's no one that can really stop him, he could rack up a few points. It was pretty much a two-headed effort against Houston with Taylor and Prince. But outside of that, the Hawks are definitely lacking when it comes to offense.
Well, I'm really banking on the Timberwolves not losing to the Hawks. And so that's why I say to keep this game close for the Hawks, is that kind of the formula, is you get Prince shooting and getting himself into a hot streak early, and you combine that with maybe some pace, maybe use transition, because you mentioned you don't have Collins in the post that much. There just isn't a huge guy that really scares me going up against Towns, maybe like a LaMarcus Aldridge for the Spurs. There's not a guy like that on the Hawks that really worries me in the half court against Towns. But if you try and neutralize that by going fast pace and using transition to maybe get out ahead of the Timberwolves defense, is that kind of the formula for the Hawks to keep this one tight?
what they will do, and it kind of relates to that, is if the Timberwolves are careless with the ball and turn it over, the Hawks will, they will punish, because they are right up there. They were first last time I checked, but they could have slipped down since. They're among the league leaders in points off of turnovers per game. So if the Wolves get careless, the Hawks can and probably will punish them. And it's not unusual for the Hawks to push some good teams close, like a number of, like many occasions this season. It has been a game going into the fourth quarter, and even further, like into the second half of that fourth quarter. Like they do push teams close. They definitely that's one thing about this team that maybe the likes of a Memphis and maybe a Phoenix maybe don't have going for them as much. This team will scrap and they will fight, and they continue to do so well after they've got something to play for. But that's the thing, that everyone has something to play for. Like Damian Lee here, recently signed, he's got things to play for. Tyler Dorsey, like these guys have a lot to play for. They have careers. Some of these guys have careers to play for. Andrew White, one of the two-way players, like these guys play hard. And if the Wolves underestimate them, there is definitely potential for an upset.
Going back to that stat, they are tied right now. I'm looking on NBA.com. They're tied right now for second with 17.3 points off of turnover per game right now. So that's pretty darn good for a team with only 21 wins to be able to capitalize and hurt teams with points like that so consistently on turnovers. The upside is that the Timberwolves are remarkably good at keeping from turning the ball over. They're third in the NBA right now, only posting 12.6 turnovers per game. So hopefully they're able to not only neutralize that side of it, but keep this game in the half court. The Timberwolves have not shown a great aptness to maybe picking up the pace of the basketball, and so I think that would probably, I think that they're capable of doing that, but because they haven't really run that style of offense, I think it would just hurt them more than anything else if they tried to play more pace, especially when they're trying to rebound after a very bad loss.
Pace under Tom Thibodeau? No. Please.
Pace and seeing the bench. Those are two things you're not going to see.
Oh gosh, I haven't even thought about the bench.
We're not going to discuss that. I've already rambled on that at length yesterday about how I'm worried about the bench. But closing out the episode here, I always make the guests when they're on the show, I always make them pick scores. And that's just for me because I try to bet the over-under on games. And so I'm trying to figure out how to bet this game. So if I'm looking at the game tonight in Minneapolis, Ramber, what am I looking at score-wise for these two teams?
I would be surprised if the Hawks cracked 100. I must be honest. Last game of a 6-game road trip, I think they'll be looking forward to getting home. Trudeau out, Bazemore out. I don't know. Torian Prince isn't. He can light it up, but betting on the reliability of Prince igniting can be very hit or miss. I do expect a Wolves win, I have to say. I do think the cash element is too great to ignore. I mean, the Hawks. I think Dedmon could be in trouble. Defensively, I think they can see. It can be hit or miss with this team. They sometimes when it rains, it pours, and. It has been like that on a few occasions defensively on this road trip. So I would have to bet that Minnesota should crack 100. And I don't know if the Hawks will. But again, this team can throw all sorts of surprises at you. So it wouldn't surprise me at the same time. But I do expect a Wolves win. And I think third quarter, I think that's when they'll start to begin to stretch it a bit. And then they should be able to take it home. But again... This team does fight, so nothing would surprise me. But I think that's how it'll go.
This number from Vegas is going to surprise you. Then the over/under is set at 220. So they're saying that there's going to be a lot of points scored. I hope that the Timberwolves can just slow this down, really feed Towns. I'm expecting like 26, maybe even 30 shots from him, really work inside. Like I said, I just don't think that there's a guy who can compete specifically with what Towns and Taj Gibson do down low. And so I suspect both those guys will have pretty solid nights. I know you're saying Collins does a great job rebounding, but just on the defensive end, I don't know if there's a guy who can really match up against those two down in the paint. And so I'm expecting a big night from Towns and a quietly good night. I think that Taj has another one of those quietly good nights where he has like an 18-10 kind of night. And in the second quarter, you're looking back and saying, wow, we may actually be in a three-point game if Taj doesn't have a 10-point second quarter. But one of those kind of nights from him. I'm expecting a big night from Towns, somewhere in the range of like a 25-12 kind of night, bounce back from some of these 15-point games that he's been having. And I'm with you on the under 100. I would go under on this bet, and I would say Timberwolves win 108-96 is my best bet.
Sounds reasonable for sure. I mean, I'm interested to hear the Collins Gibson matchup. If those two will square off, I think that could be fun.
That could be interesting because you have the speed of Collins against the wily veteran in Gibson, and I like the idea of those two kind of going back and forth throughout a game.
Yeah, it should be fun. Both like to get active on the glass, so I look forward to seeing which can come out on top.
At the end of the day, it'll just be disappointing if Towns has to play another basically 40-minute game against a team that has 20 wins. Is really where we stand. It'll probably happen, but it's going to be disappointing if it does, if he has to play a bulk of minutes against the Hawks. Thank you so much, Graham, for coming on the show. That's all we have. Thank you very much. We'll have to have you on again when we're getting closer to the draft and we're looking at prospects.
Yes, sir. We'll look forward to that.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us, and make sure to check him out on Peachtree Hoops. That's SB Nation's Atlanta Hawks page, Peachtree Hoops. Also check him out on Twitter. Go ahead and follow him. Go ahead and come out and follow me as well. I'll be posting all the shows and content to Twitter. Make sure to check out the Locked On Timberwolves fan rake site as well. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another Locked On Wolves show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.